Indiana Dems push cannabis legalization. Eli Lilly makes a stark assessment of Indiana's competitiveness, plus disappointing kids count data and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending April 22, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
This week, the Indiana Democratic Party launched a statewide tour to promote cannabis legalization. And coinciding with the launch on 420, an unofficial weed holiday, Democratic Senate candidate Tom McDermott released an ad in which he smokes a joint. The tour launch event included several veterans groups, which have been among the chief voices calling for at least legalization of cannabis for medicinal use. Veteran Destiny Scott Wells, a Democratic candidate for Secretary of State, says she sees an opportunity for Hoosier businesses and farmers.
Indiana is watching easy money leave the state because we're letting outdated ideologies and opinions on marijuana come before a revenue source for the state.
McDermott admitted he was nervous filming his commercial, which was shot in Illinois, where cannabis is legal. And he says while cannabis legalization isn't the most important issue facing Hoosiers, it's something he says needs to be fixed.
It should be treated like alcohol. We don't advocate using it before work, at work, obviously. We don't think children under the age of 21 should be able to access it either.
State House Republicans have refused to even hear legislation on cannabis legalization, and Governor Eric Holcomb has repeatedly said he wants the federal government to act first. Can Democrats turn this into a winning issue at the ballot box? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat, Ann Delaney. Republican, Mike O'Brien. John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers. And Lindsay Erdody, WFYI digital editor for Health and Education. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, McDermott acknowledged that this is not the most important issue facing Hoosiers, but can it change votes?
Well, it clearly is not the most important issue. There are half a dozen that are way more important than this, but it may motivate a certain element of the population, younger voters perhaps, veterans, people. I mean, it's about time we put this issue aside. We ought to be regulating it the same way we regulate alcohol. Okay, we ought to be getting tax revenue from it. People ought to have it available. It's particularly a problem when you realize that it does help people with terminal cancer. It does help veterans who have post-traumatic stress disorders and other kinds of injuries. So it is a useful product. We're cluttering up both the legal system and the jails with arrests for this, in some counties at least. And it's senseless. It's absolutely senseless. You know, Illinois has it, Michigan has it, other states have it, and they're still existing. It hasn't been chaos that resulted from this.
Well, I don't know. Some people think Illinois is chaos, but...
Well, how about Michigan, too? Yeah.
Maybe.
Anyway.
They have a Democratic governor, so I think they
have must be.
Now
chaos.
It's chaos.
Exactly.
We'll see how it goes in 24.
Can this be an issue? I mean, it won't be the biggest issue, we know this, but can it be an issue that changes votes?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think this falls in the bucket of Sunday sales, sports betting, other things that, like, if you poll it, I'm sure Democrats have a poll sitting on, you know, the chairman's desk that shows this is overwhelmingly popular and motivates zero people, you know, it's just, or few people that probably are already over there. You know, so I think it's one of those issues that polls well. That's not a reason not to do it, though, just because it's not going to, because it's not going to turn an election. But I think the two things. One, the governor's correct, and this should be taken care of at the federal level first. Mm-hmm. To either create a national solution for it that has equitable standards across the board, or actually permit states to do this. This legalization movement is not legalization. It's local.
Flaunting
it's local law. Enforcement limits. You know, it's limitations
because
on local enforcement.
There are logistical problems to the fact that it's still banned at the federal level,
right,
with banking and things
so
like that.
So that's not an honest conversation. One, on the legalization side, because of federal inaction. And two, it's not an honest conversation to just come with this and go, well, we're leaving a lot of revenue on the table. If you look at the other states that have done this, and this is pretty settled at this point, we're two decades into, you know, a lot of these states doing it. Colorado's always the one that people point to as kind of having the earliest, most developed market. But if you look at their revenue, they for every $1 they get in, they're spending $4 somewhere else, whether it's on the fact that the plurality of their motor vehicle deaths are attributed to marijuana, or enforcement has to change because the black market you're trying to displaced doesn't go away. It just becomes harder for law enforcement to go find it. So there's a lot of like other things, and those are not reasons to not legalize it. I'm not a prude on this. The governor's not a prude on this, but there's a there's a complete way to tell this story if you're going to go to the State House and try to sell it.
To the ad itself with McDermott, McDermott acknowledged in this press conference the day the ad was released that he was nervous doing it, which, I mean, talk to me about how this has changed in such a rapid amount of time.
Oh, it's been dramatic. I remember many campaigns where the press corps would felt obliged to ask at some point if the office that was being sought was pertinent to law enforcement in some
fashion.
Or even not.
Yeah.
Whether that person had used marijuana or drugs. And I remember...
Guilford governor's race. Remember the...
Evan Bayh sweating about it. Jeff Modisette, who was the state's drug czar, you know, how anguished he was to admit that he had tried it and, it, you know, worried about it perhaps being the signaling the end of his political career. Fast forward to this. I mean, it's. I think we all knew and had a sense that the issue had changed, much as we've seen, for instance, gay marriage, gay rights, and the recognition of alternative lifestyles. That's been another dramatic change, I think. But to see an office seeker at that level doing drugs in an ad is a bit of a surprise and is an indication of just how far we've come. And I think Democrats are clearly hoping that this, to get to your question, this breaks out from the clutter. You know, we have so many issues. Is it the economy? Is it inflation?
You know.
Is it China? Is it this? Now, if they really want to do it, it would be inflation and marijuana and say, look at the camera and say, do you know what's happened to your marijuana pricing because of supply chain issues and inflation? You're paying probably 50% more than you did at this time last year. Only we can solve that problem.
I like that ad. To the ad itself, is there any downside for McDermott?
That's a good question, and I guess we'll find out to see, to the question you initially asked, does it work and get more people to vote for him? I think we'll see, okay, does it work as a downside or was it a positive for him? I think you would have, you know, this isn't just a Democratic or Republican issue. You have some Republicans who support this. You have Libertarians who support this, and you obviously have Democrats who support this. I think the big question is that a big enough issue to make them say, okay, I don't agree with him on X, Y, and Z issues, but I agree with him a lot on this, so I'm going to vote for him on this and cross party lines in some way. I don't know. Are the Democrats who will probably vote for him regardless because he is a Democrat and, you know, they're going to support the party, does this deter them from voting for him? I don't think so.
I think the veterans groups are the real X factor here, because that's been a growing voice, particularly
right.
at the State House on this issue for obvious reasons. Ann talked a little bit about that. But if they mobilize in any significant way, veterans are a powerful voting group.
And I also think that's what's taken the stigma away more than anything.
Yeah.
Is the fact that when you have people who are standing in front of an American flag saying, I fought for this country, you know, the American Legion,
and
veterans of foreign wars.
And
they've done these groups, veterans of foreign wars. Again, American Legion have done
it,
endorsed legalization formally. So that sort of takes the notion that it's some hippie 60s trend and puts it in the
Well, it may be
it
a hippie 60s trend.
It's not That's only now, a hippie. It can be many, many things.
Cheech and
Intersectionality.
Chong,
Time now for viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question. And this week's question is, will Indiana fully legalize cannabis within the next 3 years? A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, should Indiana University recognize its graduate worker union? 74% of you say yes, 26% say no. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, Indianapolis-based pharmaceutical giant Eli Lilly's CEO David Ricks told a crowd at the Economic Club of Indiana this week that the Hoosier State isn't keeping up in key areas of competition for economic development. That's according to a report in the Indianapolis Business Journal.
The IBJ story reports that Ricks acknowledged Indiana's low cost of living, positive business tax climate, and transportation investments, but Ricks reportedly said that Indiana doesn't measure up in the education attainment of its workforce, health care costs, green energy, and the inclusion of minority groups and immigrants. IBJ notes that Ricks's comments come amid recent announcements that Lilly is investing $3 billion in new facilities outside of Indiana.
Mike O'Brien, how concerned should Hoosiers be about the Lilly CEO's comments?
I noticed the price of insulin wasn't on the list of things he could easily address, but I think if you look at the things he complimented the state on, they are things that the Republican legislature and governors for the past, you know, several years have focused on, right, to great benefit, affordability, low taxes, and all these things. there's a new emphasis in the last couple of years on quality of life and quality of place, which is what you've seen, you know, huge investments in communities to bring projects online, to bring communities together. State just went through another version of that. On green energy, I think if you look at the State House the last couple of sessions, as the utility market is moving towards renewables, so is the legislative focus on regulation. They're focusing on how can we stop locals from just like killing these projects because coal's been in their backyard forever. So we've had huge fights over siting and the permissibility of, you know, solar farms and things in Indiana. So as the legislature's focus kind of continues to move that direction, I think we'll improve in those areas.
Eric Holcomb's Ready Grant program, the latest round of which was paid for by federal dollars, isn't that getting at exactly the sort of thing that David Rich is talking about?
I don't think it gets at exactly the same sort of thing that he's talking about. What he's basically saying is that the one-trick pony of cutting taxes, which is what the Republican-controlled legislature and governor's office has done for the last 18 years, is not sufficient. You've got to invest in the future. You've got to invest heavily in education, not just to play catch-up, but for higher ed and other things, and you need a healthy population. I mean, the idea, what he's saying to people is, we are a major employer in the state of Indiana, but when we're expanding, we're looking to states that are, like, for example, Taxachusetts is what the Republicans used to call Massachusetts, because they are a high-tax state. But they want to go there because Massachusetts has used its money wisely to invest in the future, in sharp contrast to what Indiana's done.
That's because of what Romney did as governor. Probably.
Well, it's partly, it is sure. Actually partly his early adoption of Obamacare. You're right. But it's not only
that. She brought that. It right back.
There you go. It is not only that. It's also their emphasis on education. And that's where we're missing the boat. We're missing the boat deliberately because the Republicans are devoid of ideas. And the one-party control for the last 18 years has meant they don't even look at whether any of these ideas work. We don't have report cards or scorecards after they do these projects. He's giving a scorecard to Indiana, and what he's saying is, you're getting an F, because I'm moving elsewhere.
In spite of my sideswipe on Dave Ricks on insulin.
And insulin, yeah.
These are the guys that we should be listening to. I mean, clearly, they're the ones on the ground listening to these people that they're trying to bring here, who we want to live here, the reason we're building.
So, okay, so hold on. That was social issues. Downtown. That we have to stop with the social issues.
That was exactly the question I wanted to ask you, which is, you know, part of Rick's message to the Economic Club was, you have to go and tell policymakers this is what we need. Are policymakers at the Indiana State House and the Republican supermajorities listening?
No.
I have to laugh at that question a little bit, but are they listening? I mean, these are issues that business leaders have been talking about for years at this point. I mean, we've talked on this show about healthcare costs and business leaders going to the State House and saying, this is, you know, not sustainable. We're struggling. We've heard things come up about workforce development, about education, about inclusion. That might be the biggest one we've heard business leaders talking about, with RFRA and the
transgender
and
the CRT, quote unquote.
I mean, we've heard their voices at the State House on these, you know, social issues, not direct business issues, a lot lately. And I think David Ricks is just really shining a spotlight on it. Again, whether or not they listen, I don't know. I mean, because they made tweaks to some of those issues we just talked about, right? They did the RFRA fix. They,
after a tsunami,
we had a hate crimes bill that some liked, some didn't. You know, we're not going to debate that.
He shines a spotlight on, but he also shines a spotlight on a well-educated, centrist, progressive Central Indiana and everybody outstate. And most of these legislators are coming from outstate. And drive 20 minutes, I've said it before, drive 20 miles in any direction to walk in and start talking about how awful CRT and, you know, how biological boys ought to be playing girls sports in high school, and you get thrown out of the Legion.
Those are the issues that you emphasize in your campaigns.
They're where our people come from. They're where these legislators
where's
come
your
from.
Responsibility?
And when they go home, that's who they're listening to.
Okay, and where's your
and
responsibility?
That is a, and that is to... the con... It's, we're leaning into it in a lot of ways. But that's the conflict that is highlighted between the community Dave Ricks wants to build and the state he actually lives in.
And that is the problem with your redistricting and why you have gerrymandering.
Took two topics for that one this time. John Schwanes, if Florida is the guide for this, Eli Lilly criticized the state, so they should expect some sort of punishment next, right?
Right.
Well,
just like
certainly
Disney
is certainly a classic example. We also saw it with Georgia, where it wanted to play with legislation that gave Delta, which was based in Atlanta, some sort of tax advantage with fuel, with aviation fuel. And we've seen the same sorts of things in Texas, where you have red legislatures dealing with largely blue-run Fortune 500 companies. I mean, in some ways, I would say that the
run, but at least on certain issues.
Right.
I mean,
attitude. Yeah.
Well, in terms of creating the kind of creative workforce that they want to recruit, and that's what's behind a lot of this. Whether it was smoking in workplace, cutting down smoking, or dealing with RFRA, or go right down the line. But it seems to me that the governor could take this story and this discussion and put it in a file folder so that when next session, the budget session rolls around and he releases his budget, this is case exhibit A, you might say, to bolster the argument that he, in all fairness, had been making. Not many Republicans, certainly in the General Assembly, but the governor has been talking about quality of life issues and trails and interconnection of municipalities.
Public health spending.
He's already telegraphed that he wants to do a lot in terms of public health spending. He's been at a task force looking at mental health. And these are issues that don't necessarily resonate with all members of his party. But they are things that he was shining a light on before it perhaps became fashionable. So this is fodder for him to use against members of his own party.
I think the fodder ends up being, though, when it comes down to what the money is, right? And in that IBJ article it mentioned, Eli Lilly has spent and invested $3 billion elsewhere outside of the state.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, they've invested here recently, too, but not to that extent. Right. And that's the thing I think that will get people's attention.
All right. Indiana ranks in the bottom third. Here's good news in the wake of the last one. Indiana ranks in the bottom third of the country for the health of its children, one spot worse than it was last year. That's from the 2022 Kids Count data book released by the Indiana Youth Institute this week. The data book measures children's well-being across a range of factors, from education to child poverty and juvenile justice.
Indiana's worst ranking in the 2022 Kids Count data is in health, where it's 36th in the country. Youth Institute President Tammy Silverman says the latest edition captures much of the COVID-19 pandemic timeframe, which she says has only amplified Indiana's child health challenges.
A lot of these issues existed amongst our kids in many communities long before the pandemic started.
Youth Institute Vice President Clint Kugler says Indiana struggles particularly with mental health.
In comparison to our neighboring states, Indiana has the highest rate of children with mental health and behavioral conditions who did not receive counseling or treatment.
Indiana is also worse than the national average for children without health insurance, overweight or obese children, and child and teen death rates.
John Schwanis, I've asked this a lot the last year or so, but how much of what's in this report, because this really captures that 2020, for the most part, timeline of the height of the pandemic. How much do you just go, well, that was the pandemic, and shrug your shoulders?
I'm sure some people will, but the problem is this trend was in place well before the pandemic. We already were not spending as much as other states in terms of intervention with young people and the kinds of health issues, whether physical health or mental health, that they face. And if anything, all the pandemic did was shine a spotlight on it, maybe exacerbate a problem and a trend that was already there and already problematic. And this is a tough one, because when you look at ways to deal with these issues at state governmental level, you're talking about identifying mental health challenges early on and intervening. You're talking about identifying health risks or socioeconomic factors that could contribute to health risks. And guess what? Those are the programs that a lot of people, the same people we were just talking about in the General Assembly, many of them say, get government out of my kid's backpack. If I'm worried, don't worry about little Joey smoking at age 7. That's mom and dad's issue, you know.
Yeah.
And same thing with mental health. You know, now you can't do screening. You can't reach out and find people and offer them counseling without parents who may, in fact, be part of the problem. May be the problem. So, I mean, I don't see a lot of appetite for the kinds of intervention for young people because of these parental right issues that we probably need to see dramatic change.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. Is the conversation on this pretty much a mirror image of the conversation we just had about changing things at the State House?
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to how much money is being spent, right? Running these programs, having people available to help children, whichever way you want to look at it, costs money. Making sure children have health insurance, making sure they're eating healthy. All of these things take money, and it comes down to how much is the state going to put in the budget for these things. It goes back to the governor's public health commission. I mean, they're all interrelated, and all gets back to the point that David Ricks is making about this is a problem. I mean, if families are looking at this and seeing this report, seeing how we're 36 in the country, and, you know, they're not necessarily thinking, oh, Indiana's a great place for families. Let's go there.
let me ask you the question this way, which is, you know, the health of our kids becomes the health of our adults. And high healthcare prices, everybody has a role to play, but the unhealthiness of Hoosier citizens is part of why our healthcare costs are so high in this state.
That's right.
So all of these things, the business community talking about things that don't seem particularly business related, but are.
They are, yeah.
What is it going to take for lawmakers at the State House on some of these issues that they have been resistant to go, let's think about this a different way?
I think you have to change the lawmakers. I really do. I mean, it isn't only the fact that they don't want to spend the money. They are so obsessed with the tax cutting, they cut the tax on vaping. They would not increase the tax. They actually discussed cutting the tax on cigarettes. And there's plenty of data out there that the cigarettes contribute to all of these things, to health trouble, to cancer, to all kinds of things. They don't want to hear it. They don't want to do it. They think that the only function of government is to not do anything except cut taxes.
It's not going to change as long as that legislature is there.
Yeah, it's not.
I mean, don't do a needle
exchange.
So I'm
going to ask you the same question I asked her. On some of these issues where I know that a Republican point of view is often that government is not the solution. It is often the problem. I'm going to say on some of these issues, government is the problem, because if we're stopping mental health screenings in schools, where this report has told us that for a lot of kids, getting access to care happens in schools if it happens at all. Exactly. What does it take to get the legislature to at least consider doing something different?
Well, we've experienced what was just talked about here, and these issues do get manipulated into other fringe issues, right? With needle exchange or mental health screenings at schools becomes about abortion, and a kid thinks he's gay
and LGBTQ rights.
And the parents go,
And
the parents go, wait a minute. And in some cases, fairly, but we way overshoot to the other direction. I think what we're going to find out the real answer to this on the money and the willingness of the legislature to move forward when the governor is coming out with, and as recently this week, they had more public hearings on the recommendations on improving public health, and it's going to come with a gigantic, it'll be the biggest price tag next session.
Yeah.
And he's now, for two sessions, said, hang on, don't overspend on this increased revenue.
He's been promising this is coming.
Because I'm filling that. Yeah. I'm going to have a hole you're going to have to fill.
It'll tell you a lot about sort of the fate of a lot of this, just how much money he can get for this public health.
Could we move maybe to 40th instead of 47th or 49th in state funding for health?
You could probably spend a lot of money and only move to 40th. Mm. Two top political analysis outlets have changed their rating of Indiana's first congressional district race, labeling it more competitive for Republicans.
Both Cook Political Report and Sabato's Crystal Ball at the University of Virginia Center for Politics changed incumbent Democrat Frank Mervan's district from likely Democratic to leans Democratic. Mervan was outraised in the first quarter of 2022 by Republican candidate Blair Milo. Mervan still has a nearly 3-to-1 cash-on-hand advantage over any opponent. Milo faces a tough primary fight against, among others, Jennifer Ruth Green, who closed the first quarter with more cash in her campaign account than Milo.
Lindsay or Doty, how worried should Frank Mervan be?
I don't think very worried for several reasons that you pointed out in the piece there. One, he still has significantly more cash on hand. Two, she still has to win a primary, and that's no guarantee, right? And three, he's an incumbent, right? Incumbents are, if you look at all the data, incumbents have an advantage at winning re-election. It's just how it ends up being. I would say he can maybe start being worried. if a couple things happen. If she wins, she wins the primary, if he continues to be out fundraised, and that would signify like Democrats are maybe thinking, oh, this is safe, we don't need to worry about it, and kind of end up sleeping on it. And we've seen incumbents lose that way.
To Lindsey's point, how much is who his Republican opponent will be?
I think he's going to be fine. He's well known in that district. The family is well known in that district, and he's done a good job, and he's raised money. Is the turnout down in an off-year election? It always is. But he's going to be fine.
Because of gerrymandering.
Is Joe Biden's unpopularity going to ultimately cost Frank Mervan his seat?
Not in that district.
I don't know. I think it can be competitive. I think the problem that Frank Mervan has to that point is that there are 28 toss-up seats nationally right now. The vast majority of those are Democrat seats. There's more lean Democrat seats that are viewed as vulnerable.
So how much money can they spend?
How much money can Democrats go? They may have to go to Frank Mervan and go, hey, you got to save yourself here if he gets in trouble and has Blair Milo breathing down his neck. Or Jennifer Green, who's an incredibly accomplished candidate in her own right.
All right. Well, that is Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Lindsay Erdodi, WFYI digital editor for Health and Education. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.